he wanted to explain to all the startup female founders in the auditorium how females should behave in order to get heard by male investors. And okay, you need to be more bold, blah, blah, blah. All that stuff that we really don't want to hear anymore. And after like 3 minutes of that talk, I said, you want bold? I went back onto the stage and said, okay, Dirk, please, when will all of you really intelligent and seasoned guys learn how to interpret women when they are talking? So this is not that difficult.
This is Female Business Angel Podcast,
your go-to destination if you're a business angel or would like to get into angel investing and don't know where to start.
Or if you just want to find out how we tick. We're Tina and Katja, both business angels from Berlin. Well, I'm a VC now. We will interview established female business angels about how they got started and how it is going, including all the best tips and tricks.
So get ready for some insider stories and personal empowering moments and revelations with these incredible women.
Welcome to this journey with us. This is Female Business Angel Podcast. My name is Tina, and today I will be speaking to Heidrun Twesten. Heidrun is a real veteran of the German startup scene, going right back before the first dot-com bubble. She has vast experience in communications for startups and corporates. She's also author of the Gründerinnenhandbuch, Die wichtigsten Fragen und Antworten bei Gründern von Startups und KMU, which should be in your qualified bookstores from July 2020. This book she's written together with Marlies Jahnke, and together they also have the Equalizer podcast, where I had also the pleasure of being the inaugural guest. So thank you, Heidrun, for being with us, and it's a pleasure to have you.
Okay, Heidrun, very nice to have you. You were actually my podcast icebreaker. And it was a very nice podcast for me because you released it just before my 40th birthday. And I got really lovely feedback to it. And while we were recording it, you took a really nice picture of me. And I was just like, this makes me really happy. Makes me really feel good about myself. So I really hope I can return something of the favor to you. And it was a very nice podcast for me to record because I really felt I could be myself. So I hope we can do the same here.
Yeah, I hope so too. So I'm honored to be invited to the podcast of Investor of the Year.
Thank you.
Congrats to that. And yeah, likewise, you were our first podcast interviewee or partner, and you are the all-time star of our podcast as well.
Okay.
In terms of downloads. So that was, I think, a very prosperous meeting for all of us. So everyone learned a lot, and it was, yeah, you were our icebreaker too. So
good. tell us a little bit about yourself. Tell us a bit about your professional career and how did you get into angel investing?
Yeah, I think I'm a little bit older than you, unfortunately. So I started way back after I did an MBA in England. I came back to Germany and started at one of the very small investor relations firms that were already there at that time in the middle of the 90s. So and they were doing annual reports for big corporates like Bayer, BASF, and so on. And I was the sixth employee there. And and I think 1 or 2 years later, Neuer Markt, the German startup stock exchange segment was introduced. So before then, there wasn't really a capital market tradition in Germany, not for everyone. So and then startups could float their shares just with having a concept at Neuer Markt. And we decided to jump on that wagon and jump onto that train and consult the companies who wanted to go public or get a listing in terms of story development and like capital markets communication to investors and so on. So I accompanied, I don't know, like almost 30 teams to executive teams to the stock exchange, and some of them startups like I think still know today, Intershop or lots of other biotech, e-commerce and so on startups, and as well bigger companies like Ludwig Beck or Epcos, who was one of the, you know, who was the first spin-off of Siemens, a test for Infineon, which came later. So that was a really interesting time, and it was like now in the startup ecosystem was similar to that. It was the dot-com bubble, which burst eventually. But for me, it was very interesting because I was like an end of my 20s and consulting all those old white men and young white men, but still older than me in most cases then. And yeah, it was very interesting. I learned a lot. And that was really my start into the capital markets. And then after 3 years in that company, which I helped grow from 6 to 60 people on 4 locations, I became member of the board. I think I was 30 by then, and didn't know anyone else from the female part of the population at that time who was a board member as well. But that has changed, luckily. And yeah, I stayed on for 3 more years. And then after that, I thought, okay, the startup spirit is lost at this firm. I need to go away, and founded my own company called Impact. And at the same time, in 2002, and 2 weeks after I got it registered, I found out that I started a family, obviously, at the same time. So that wasn't really intended at that point in time. But on the other hand, we were planning to do that anyway. So yeah, I had this double startup firm. And not a real startup. It was no startup because it was a consultancy, yeah. Not scalable, but at least so I had the family.
No, but still a tough situation to start onboarding clients, and you're like, oh well, actually.
Yeah, I already had clients, and I already had offices and employees and so on. Everything was ready to start, and then luckily also I had my parents and my the father of my child, so, and all of them said, okay, my parents said, we raised you like this, and my partner said, okay, I choose you because of that. And so we did it all together. So
cool.
we shared all the work concerning the child, and even if I didn't spend all my time with him, he turned out quite well. So, and I can only advise everyone else to don't hesitate to do the job and family building at the same time, because there's no easier way, I think, than having your own firm, making your own decisions and raising your family at the same time. Mm-hmm. So I think it's much easier than if you do it while employed at a bigger corporation.
Yeah, probably. Yeah, I think in essence, you probably have to put more hours in, but on your own terms.
Yeah,
and with a different level of pressure.
Definitely. And you can decide when to put in the hours, and you can also decide on what you want to prioritize. So, and I think when I recognized I was pregnant, I just didn't take on as many clients as I would have if I hadn't been pregnant. So I just decided to start a little bit smaller. So because in that business, you really have to keep your deadlines. So I really took a very cautious approach, so as not to let any client down and still start the business. So it was a slower growth than otherwise, but it was still okay. And after my kid was born, then it took off.
So how did you get into angel investing then?
Yeah, it was funny because after the dot-com bubble burst, and I founded my own company, there was no startup ecosystem like it is now. And I consulted lots of bigger corporations. So, and you know how it is, having worked at Axel Springer as well, I think. So, and I really missed this buzz of the startup world and of all this, trading shares and stuff like that. So eventually, after my kid was a little bit bigger, I started helping startups as a mentor directly, and also I also mentored for lots of different accelerators like Next Commerce Accelerator, Next Media Accelerator, Airbus BizLab, and so on. So, but then in the beginning, I think the first one was Next Media Accelerator, which eventually was started. And and then I got to know more and more startups, and I think I already invested smaller sums, like 5K or so in smaller companies then, before business angeling became such a big topic as well in Germany. And I think my first bigger ticket was when a friend of mine and a serial founder, so I knew the guy, I knew he would eventually achieve something good or something more, make some more of my money. So I invested a bigger sum. And also doubled it when he got his second round. So I was really exposed. I like a little bit more than felt comfortable for me. I knew him. He was a successful person and very well settled in the stuff he was doing. So yeah, I got my money back 2 years later with a 20% return. So that was fine. And that was my real start into business angeling. Yeah, I would say
Cool. But that's, yeah. I mean, I guess given the situation right now with the economic situation, it's you have kind of some experience on the downturn to look back on that, or the bubble.
Yeah,
that,
definitely.
A lot of people that are around can't remember. I mean, we all remember kind of 2008, but a lot of us, not all of us actually.
No. And people even younger than you. I didn't mention that. So in that time when we did IPOs, we were always lucky to be able to invest as friends and family. So I could buy the shares before they got floated. And then usually on the first day of trading, you would make 100%. So I made a lot of money then. And in the first months, and I think first, I don't know, recall exactly, but first 1 year or 2 years, you didn't have to pay taxes on that gains, on those gains. So even if you sold them immediately. So that was a kind of a strange gold digger atmosphere then. Mm-hmm. And and I think lots of retail investors lost a lot of money that went to bigger funds. In the end, so to the professionals. Luckily, I didn't lose any money, or not really. So I think I got out. It was like 300K after the dot-com bubble in the plus. So that was used then to fund my firm and start out. But yeah, I think lots of people lost trust at all altogether in capital markets, and so that's why we have such a low quota of people who own shares in Germany. And I think what many people don't really acknowledge still at the moment is, you know, buying NFT, buying blockchain and crypto stuff, that they don't really understand. I think this is one of the problems as well. So people want to earn a lot of money and they wanted to invest at Neuer Markt as well, but without doing the work of understanding the companies they invest in and the logics and structures that define success in the end. So.
Are you invested in crypto?
No, I never. I never did.
I haven't either. It's embarrassing to say, but I'm not.
I don't think so.
Because I just don't know enough about it, and I know there's so much knowledge to have had. So,
and I don't understand it. Yeah. There's three things I never did. So the one thing was like, how do you call it in English? Ships battalion. So you know, there's a
shipping
tax model.
Yeah.
Shipping. Yeah, it's not shipping. Yeah, but you there was
your own parts of
avoiding
ships.
Your own parts of ships in order to that was like 20 years ago or 15 years ago, in order to save taxes. I never understood the logic behind that, and lots of people lost a lot of money in that. And then the next thing was those Lehman certificates. Mm. I didn't invest in those either, because that's one thing that I always said is like, I only invest in stuff I understand. So best in stocks of your own clients. That okay, then you are an insider and can only sell in certain periods. But you know, you understand the business models, you understand the market, so you might not always make the most of your returns, but you don't lose the money either.
Yeah. So coming back to angel investing, what's your motivation to do it right now? Is it just the money or is there more?
No, definitely it's not just the money, because we all know can all be gone especially in times like these. No, I think that we have a very similar motivation. All this ecosystem is dominated by men. And we all know the figures, like 16% of startup funds in Germany are females, 20% if you look at the world, and they only get like between 1% and 3% of worldwide venture capital. I don't exactly know how much of the business angel capital they get, but I suppose it's even less because there are not many female business angels. So my big motivation is to support female founders and also to support other women to invest into female founders or and it's really important because my ecosystem or my personal ecosystem is very varied. So I have lots of people or lots of friends who are not into capital markets at all and not inside the startup ecosystem. So for them, it's a big black box. And I think as long as there are not more women investing into startups, there won't be much development concerning the share of female founders, because for them it's much more difficult to raise money. Luckily, we have like institutions like AUXO at the moment.
Institutions.
big institutions. And, female
institution of three people.
doesn't matter. But, you know, the buzz that you are making is much bigger than those three people. So, I think this is my main motivation to further the female cause. So, I think it's not a secret. I'm a feminist, even though I love men. But I think that needs to be done much more in order to further our cause, not only for the women, but also for the men, because all the nice guys I know love working together with women. And I think it's much more fun for everybody if we further the cause.
I think it's so true. I mean, you know, we invest only in companies with at least one woman, but we do like mixed teams the most.
So I agree.
Would you say that that's also for you like the most satisfying thing about angel investing, being able to support founders early on, or especially female founders? Or are there other things that you just really love about it?
Yeah, so I love the spirit. So I really enjoyed so much to talk to those people. So on the energy and great ideas they have. So I really love to help them realize those ideas. So even if I lose money, because I think money for me is, so I'm not super rich at all, but money is something. Yeah, it's virtual. So it's not, you know, as long as I have enough to lead a good life, it's not like having like some hundreds of thousands of euros on my bank account doesn't really give me anything. So I want to do something with it. And if I can help young people to develop new great ideas, it's just a big fun for me. And so that's the one thing. So to be able to enjoy this spirit. And the other thing is I'm also very much into impact investing, because I think really the big problem of the world today is the climate crisis. So it's not a change, it's a crisis. It's a real crisis, and it gets overlaid by lots of other bad stories at the moment, but it's the basic and most important threat to humanity, not to the planet, but to humanity. So I think with every euro invested, you can not only help women to thrive, but also if you invested wisely to influence the path that our economy will take in the future. So I wouldn't invest in anything that doesn't have a positive impact on the future anymore. I use my money to, you know, to set a little bit of influence on the head as well.
Yeah, and I think the nice thing is with the angel investing, especially if you go into these areas, it's that, okay, so you put money into one company, but usually because you do it, you motivate some other people to do it. Mm-hmm. And so lots of people put money into companies. Other people see those founders being able to get the funding, so they're going to start setting up companies. So it really feels like it sometimes feels like every ticket you put has a ripple effect that goes
absolutely
goes beyond.
Yeah, that's a cool story. So I think in one of the first batches of Next Commerce Accelerator, there was Hannah Asmussen, which we both know, Lisa Dahl,
yes,
and Franz Löw. So we love
them. They're a spectacular founders. The company is called Localize, by the way. Anyone who's listening who needs to localize.
Digital relocation service.
It's an amazing company.
Yeah. And so I met them there at a very early stage of their startup development. Unfortunately, I wasn't yet, ready to invest. So I didn't.
Bad mistake.
Mistake. So you were better, but later on. I met Hannah again in 2019 in Lisbon at the Web Summit. And she told me that just some cool female investors invested in them. That was you. And I think that was the basis of like how we got connected. And so since then, since 2019, I think there's so much has been developed in this female realm of the startup ecosystem. And it is, so for me and like in my bubble and how I see, so much change has already happened that it's really beautiful to see.
Yeah, it's really, I know the statistics don't show it yet, but it feels like it's so real that it is going to shift.
Absolutely.
It just all takes time, but it really feels feels like there's something shifting.
It was so funny when we launched our podcast in Hamburg. It was at an event, one of the first events after Corona, called Female Start Aperitivo, which is done by the IFB, so the Investment and Förderbank of Hamburg. And we had always different problems to get female business angels or investors on the stage, because in Hamburg there are not so many. So I think Fabiola, your colleague, was invited, but she couldn't make it. So we had to take one guy. And so he wanted to explain to all the startup female founders in the auditorium how females should behave in order to get heard by male investors. And he's like, okay, you need to be more bold, blah, blah, blah. All that stuff that we really don't want to hear anymore. And after like 3 minutes of that talk, I said, okay, you want bold? I went back onto the stage and said, okay, Dirk, please, when will all of you really intelligent and seasoned guys learn how to interpret women when they are talking? So this is not that difficult. And he was then, after that, the next day, he invited me to do a joint investment. So that was fun, because he said it's getting difficult for male investors or male business angels to get to invest in the good teams, in the good female-led teams, because now there are already so many female investors of that. So and the good female teams try to get female investors because it's easier in the beginning to work with other women. So this is a really interesting thing he said there. And I think this is a very good development, so that female funds have a bigger choice whether to take on male or female investors or to mix, because also there it's much better to have a diverse crowd of investors than only men or only women.
Yeah, but we're seeing also a lot with, especially with more experienced founders, that they're just like, you know what? I'm just going to set my own quota here, and I'm just going to like get the women in. And that is actually important for the female founders, not just because they want women represented in their shareholder circles, but also because they're like, oh, look, this is one small thing I can do. I'm just going to do it.
Yeah.
So they definitely, and it's so like, it's like a self-created quota.
Yeah. And I really love that. So I'm curious to see where we stand in 10 years' time.
Me too. And it's and of course it's also like just opportunistically it's nice, you know, because you get into things that maybe you wouldn't get into. Yeah. But I think it's one of the situations where it's okay to be opportunistic and use the opportunity that's there.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So you mentioned that you've been you kind of started getting into angeling a little bit through mentoring and accelerators, and we get asked so much, how do you get into it? How do you break into the scene? And I really think that's a really good way. Do you have any hints on how to manage your mentoring commitments?
How to manage them or how to
To get to them, how to make sure they don't eat you up, to...
Yeah, so my experience with mentoring is... my expertise is very close to the core of investing. So I did a lot of workshops, or I still do, on story development. So not storytelling, but how to develop your value or equity story so that it's matching investors' needs. And I did.
You're going to actually have to mentor us for our next pitch deck.
Yeah, lovely. I would love to, really. I have to go to Berlin anyway to mentor one of my startups. One of the startups I'm invested in, so perhaps he can do a joint session. I would suggest to just, you know, if you start out, to just go to events that are held by the startup ecosystem, like Demo Days or everything that is connected to that area, and try to find out how your expertise can help startups, and then try to talk to accelerators and find out whether they might be interested in your expertise and in how you can bring that to those startups that are in those accelerators. And my experience is that it doesn't eat me up, because I can always like not do anything if I don't want to, if I don't have time, because mentoring is something you give for free, so nobody can force you to spend more time than you really have. So and I always find it very, so I'm now, I think at the moment I'm a mentor at like 4 or 5 accelerators and other institutions.
Wow, that's a lot.
Yeah, but you know, 2 of them are not really active at the moment, so it's always like in waves. So at some of them I'm doing more. So for example, last week I was in Kiel in the north of Germany at Prototyping Kit, and they are more like, have smaller startups, more impact oriented, but still super interesting teams and cool atmosphere. So it's really rewarding for me to be able to work with those
great
players,
and cool.
I think, you can always decide how much time you want to invest in that, so nobody would force you to spend more than you can. So,
Yeah.
I think the most important thing is to really know whether you have something important to give to startups. So because they have not a lot of time, so they need to do, especially in the early stages, there's so much to do, and the most important thing is to scale, so to find clients for them. And it's, I think for many it's difficult to distinguish what they need to do and what is not necessary at that moment in time. And I think a good mentor keeps that in mind and doesn't try to, you know, just for the sake of mentoring startups
make this thing too.
Yeah.
But again, I think this is something that, like, I think literally every conversation we've had on this podcast is like, you need to know who you are and what you can deliver. Yeah. And be really clear on it. And I think it's actually I think it's actually also a very good exercise in general, you know, like for angeling, because you, for the first time, many people, I think, just sell themselves.
Yes.
You know, like it's not just, oh, this is my position. This is like, no, this is who I am as a whole person with all my skills, all my experiences, and take me. and only the bits of me that you need. So I think it's actually a kind of a nice reflection exercise, self-reflection exercise to work out your positioning as an angel.
Definitely. So, and for me, one of the things I'm not sure, but would like to hear your take on it. It's like brain for equity is something that I hear very often, and I'm not really sure I like it so much. What is your take on it?
Yeah,
okay.
Yeah, yeah, I hate it. There are some situations where it makes sense, but then the equity should be literally minimal. Like,
yeah.
So in my first angel investment, I got a little sweat equity. But I was in a situation where I had a lot of time. I really committed to do real time with the founder. Mm. And he really needed what I had.
Yeah.
And I took literally tiny, 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 tiny share.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because I understood how valuable it is. Like, nothing is as expensive as equity. So I don't think it's something that should be done at scale, and never should you give away more than even in the early stages, 1% for it.
Yes, yeah, yeah.
Never.
I agree.
And I mean, if you look at the big companies, even like the medical advisory boards, there's really high value at boards. They barely take anything. So it's if you're a founder and someone comes along and is like, oh, but I'm so smart at this stuff, give me 5%, you should always say no.
Yeah, I agree.
There are some programs where it's worth it. Like when you have an acceleration program and it's combined with cash, then it's a different game. But also there, you should be so careful.
Yeah. That's right. Yeah. So yeah, because you can. Yeah. Sorry. No.
No.
You go.
What are? What's your biggest mistake you've made as an angel?
My biggest mistake I've made is none so far.
Were you always happy with the money that you put in? The amount?
The first time. The first big investment I just mentioned before. I think when I doubled the amount because I didn't want to get diluted in the beginning, in the first weeks after that, I really thought, okay, my God, if all this money is gone, that would be really bad. But it didn't, it wasn't gone, so it made some nice profits, so it was fine. So not yet. So I did some, but I'm one of those people who forgets the bad things
very quickly.
Yeah. So I did a lot of crowdfunding
when
it came up. I did some someone at Start Next where you just get some products but also some crowd investment with Companisto and so on. And I didn't really look very much into the startups that I invested in because it was just 1K or 5K, so smaller sums of money. And I lost some of that, but it was, on the other hand, it was not a big mistake because I invested with open eyes and said, okay, and this money might very well be gone, so I didn't invest much.
Yeah, because a little bit what you're saying is something we hear a lot is I put too much money into the first investment.
Yeah.
Because I didn't realize how much I want to do and how many companies I want to do.
Yeah, and I think this is something that is generally the problem if you are not a real, so in my word, a real business angel is someone who can invest 2 million and can lose it. So you can put 10 tickets at 200K into several startups, or not in the beginning, but over time, because you always need some money in order to go participate in the next round and so on. So this is real business angels, so they don't really worry about losing 500K. So for me, this would be far too much to lose. So, and I think for women, because there are not so many wealthy women, not so many female founders who have already sold their businesses. So for women, it's more difficult to really get into intelligent business angeling because you need 10. If you want to put in numbers, you need 10 startups to get your money back.
So I would say you need 15.
Yeah. And
that was one of the reasons why I got a gang together, because I said alone, I can never do that.
Yes. Yes.
My tickets are going to be so tiny because I didn't have too much money.
Yeah.
So, so that's why it's a really good idea also to get a gang together to get that diversification going because it is critical.
Yeah. And on the other hand, even if you get a gang together, then it's always the question of, you know, knowing how to define which startups are good ones. And yeah. It's so difficult. So in the beginning, in that point in time of the development of a startup, it's really impossible to tell. So you really need to have experience to do that. And I think you can also lose all your money when investing in 30 startups because you invest in just the not the right ones. So that is an art. So but not, until now, I have invested wisely, or they are just not, they just haven't failed yet.
So we always ask like the two final questions. What advice do you give to aspiring angel investors?
I would always try to find some more experienced angels to invest together so that you can learn from them. Talk about it, ask people, like every startup should also do, like talk about what you are doing, ask people what you want to know. Don't feel shy because you don't know everything already. Immerse yourself in the ecosystem. Try to read all the stuff that is necessary. Follow the media that are reporting about startups and the whole ecosystem. And yeah, only invest what you won't need until in the future. So I think especially now, it might be tempting to invest your money in startups because you don't get anything anywhere else. So there's no interest. Capital markets like stock exchange is a problem at the moment. And inflation is high. So it's might be tempting to put money into startups because you think they might make the most of it. But still don't just do it with really the amount that you are happily willing to lose and that doesn't, that you don't need for old age or children's studies or whatever. So this is very important. And I would also say pool with more people and invest small sums together. So on the one hand, it's not really good for startups to have a lot of small investors, but, now with convertible loans, that might be easier, but still, I think it's better to pool with more people in order and then invest bigger sums together. But on an individual level, it's better to invest small sums if you don't have.
If you have small sums, you really want to be low effort, effort, high value add.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yes, absolutely.
To close off, what's the one thing you would like to change in the world?
Equality. I would really like everything to be 50-50. I think we would have less wars and everything would be nicer, better, more beautiful and more
fun.
Balanced.
Exactly. Cool. Thank you, Heidrun.
Thank you.
It's a bank holiday today. It's Himmelfahrt today. So thank you for taking the time.
Yeah, on Father's Day,
Father's
Day. All the mothers have time.
So thank you so much, and I really hope to see you soon in person again.
Yes, me too. So get well.
Thank you.
Stay well.
Yes,
and
thank you.
See you soon.
Okay. Bye bye.
Bye.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here, and it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. Hello Fresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. Hello Fresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at hellofresh.com.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.